Hello and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both excited for today's episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. During our first season, which is available wherever you get your podcast, we talked about leadership educators, who they are, what they do, etc. This season, Dan and I are speaking with educators from each of the ILEC professional associations, i.e. ACPA, ALE, ILA, NASPA, NACA, ACUI, and the NCLP. I know that sounds like a lot of alphabet soup, but each session will explain exactly what those organizations stand for and exactly what those organizations do to help leadership educators. Today's episode, we're talking with Vernon Wall about his involvement in the ACPA, College Student Educators International. So Vernon, welcome officially to the Leadership Educator Podcast.
Hey y'all, how are you doing?
We're excited to have you, Vernon. So before we jump into our list of questions, we'd love to hear a little bit about your background. Would you mind starting by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with ACPA?
Sure. Undergrad NC State, graduate work at Indiana University. My first job out of grad school was at UNC Charlotte. And I was there for 2 years. I worked in housing and residential life at UNC Charlotte, UNC Chapel Hill, and then the University of Georgia for 10 years. So that's University of Georgia is probably, I would say, my young professional home, I guess, in terms of when I became a professional, I believe. What a great experience, worked with great people for 10 years. Then decided as I kind of moved up in res life, in residential life, decided to look at some other options and was able to go on semester at sea. And really that was a turning point for me in terms of helping me focus my job search when I came back. It was a great experience. And then applied for positions, dean of students, assistant dean of students, and got an assistant dean of students position at Iowa State University, where I was there for 7 years, and leadership development reported directly to me. And so really that was probably the time that I spent the most in terms of in-depth look at research and scholarship around leadership development. This was during the time when a young, wonderful professional named Susan Kolbevis decided to pull together a book that talked about the social change model, and everybody was just buzzing about it. And I happen to have a graduate student who I'm going to give a shout out to, John Schertzer, who was a master's student in the higher education program. And he was my grad assistant 1 year, and he came into my office with the book and said, I want to work with you to totally revamp leadership development at Iowa State because it has no theoretical backgrounds whatsoever. And he was exactly right. And I will definitely give props to him for really pushing the envelope at a time when people really were just starting to talk about what does leadership education look like on a college campus. And so as a result, we really had a great time developing some great programs. And also too, working with him to evaluate them in very research-focused ways, which really hadn't been done before. Then left Iowa State and then moved to Washington, D.C., where I worked in the international office for ACPA. So that was interesting to work for an association. And happy to talk about that at some point, too. Then after that, was also doing some consulting along the way, mostly around issues of inclusion and social justice on college campuses. And then I've always sort of had a role with Leadershape, which is a nonprofit that works with college students around leading with integrity. And I have always loved what they've done. And so as a result, I I basically just reached out and said, I'd love to be on staff if you have any positions. And that was a while ago, 7 years ago, maybe. So really enjoying working with that. Got an interesting call a couple of years ago that basically said, surprise, you've been nominated for the ACPA presidency. And I'll be completely honest with you, it was not on my radar. You never know where life is going to take you. And I think maybe as a younger professional, when I was involved in associations, I thought maybe at some point I would do it. But then I started working with a nonprofit and working in the office, and I didn't think it would happen. And then I was on the ballot and was elected. So starting in March, I will be ACPA's president, my convention is Long Beach in 2021. I'm excited. Kind of going full circle. I was convention chair when we were in Long Beach in 2002. And so it's going full circle now. I'm going back as president. So that's kind of me right now. Yeah, that's enough for now.
I love hearing that journey that you've shared about going from like a grad student all the way to being nominated for ACPA president.
Yeah, it was, it's kind of surreal, to be honest with you. It's fun that we're having this conversation now because I just wrapped up my presidential address because I have to send it in so it can be captioned and everything. And so that's why all of these dates are really on my mind, because I had to kind of research like what exactly was that conference that I did and, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah. So all of this is kind of fresh because I've got to kind of do a little speech in Nashville in a couple of weeks. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, Vernon, you talked about going all the way back to 02, being convention chair there. What were some of your first experiences that you remember getting involved with ACPA? Where did you first learn about it?
Well, in my graduate program at Indiana University, we were a pretty balanced program in terms of both ACPA and NASPA. And our faculty really encouraged us to attend both if we had the financial resources to do it. And the academic program that I was in would also support us to attend conferences. And I remember the very first ACPA I went to was in 1983. It was in Houston. Susan Komovitz was the president. She was pregnant on stage. And that's what I remember most, is like when she gave her opening remarks, she talked about, you know, being the first ACPA president to be pregnant during her term. And everybody kind of laughed. But what I remember most about the very first ACPA, if you were this graduate student and there were 3,000 people there, and I'm thinking, I don't think I've ever experienced anything so massive as a young graduate student. And what I noticed was when I would go to random receptions, if there were leaders that were there, they were probably the most accessible leaders that I had ever met. I mean, I'm a graduate student and you're talking to me and I just read your chapter for graduate school and you're just having a conversation with me as if, you know, we're just regular people hanging out. And, you know, it was really, I think the welcomeness of that was probably the most exciting for me. Surprisingly, the very first thing I did, at the time the commissions were numbered rather than like the Commission for Professional Preparation, which is the functional area group for faculty in higher education in ACPA. It was called a Commission 12. They were numbered. And so I remember going to one of the meetings because Nancy Evans was my major professor and she was chair of the commission. And she asked me to go. And she said, I'll never forget it. She said, I would really love for there to be more graduate student representation in this commission because we're about professional preparation for graduate students. And she said, there are a lot of old white men sitting around this table and I'm really tired of it. And that was Nancy Evans' way of saying, come join me. And so I was one of the first graduate students to be a part of the commission. I was on the directorate. Whenever you see an email about National Careers and Student Affairs Month, I was a part of starting that, which I forget all the time that it was several of us in ACPA and NASPA who sort of got together with Commission 12 and said, let's do this sort of Careers and Student Affairs Week at the time, which is now a month. That was sort of my beginning. It was really through that commission that I then became more involved in some of the standing committees at the time. They're now called coalitions, but the Standing Committee for LGBT was in its first years of development. The Commission for Multicultural Affairs, the Committee for Multicultural Affairs was there. So yeah, a lot of those things. One thing about ACPA that's always been so interesting is its easy access to leadership. Not only leadership roles in terms of people that you interact with, but also too, you could leave a convention and have a major role in one of the volunteer entity groups. And I remember there were a time I was like a newsletter editor one time. I mean, there are all of these things that were just great ways to sort of build your connection to the association. So, yeah.
I love hearing you talk about all those experiences that you've had about how easy it is to get involved and contribute. It just seems like ACPA really lives the leadership practices that we try and teach or talk to our students about. I went to ACPA for the first time in March of 2018 when it was in Boston. I didn't fly in. I took the train in, so I didn't get stuck in the like foot and a half of snow that I think a lot of people got stuck in that conference. But I remember walking around feeling as if I had been there before and everyone was so open and that it really truly felt inclusive. Like there were gender neutral bathrooms and it just felt like you could be whoever you wanted to be, whatever identity you had, you could be in that space. And I just remember it was like the first time I truly felt that I was at a professional and conference that really stood with or modeled that inclusion and that inclusivity, as well as after I left, there were just so many great people I'd never met, but had worked in student affairs for years. And it felt like I was open to another like wave of people that I didn't even know existed. And so in thinking about, you know, that experience that I had at that conference and thinking about like your membership, like, is there anything that you experienced like between graduate student, like getting involved and being like ACPA president, just like experienced as a member that stood out for you?
Being involved in convention planning teams, it was extremely rewarding because here it is, you're developing a product that you want to kind of share with folks and really have an experience for people. So that was really kind of cool. To be a part of those convention planning teams. It was great to know that as a member, I could be a convention chair and deliver a convention. I think too, I was a part of several committees that talked about consolidating ACPA and NASPA. So being in the room when those historic conversations were happening was kind of cool. I was there at the beginning when I think people don't realize that ACPA was initially a part of APGA, which is sort of a counseling association. It was actually an entity within, and now it's called ACA, the American Counseling Association. But we were a part of this larger group. And I remember very early on in my career, there was a lot of talk about disaffiliating from ACA and becoming ACPA, which really was not that long ago. That I remember, you know, it was the conversations around developing an international office and hiring executive director, and it was really fascinating to be a part of the early years of ACPA when we became our own entity, and to just be a member and be a part of those conversations. I think I was on the governing board as member at large at that time, and you know, it was interesting. It was a little overwhelming, I think, for me. Looking back now, I'm thinking, I was really too young to be on the governing board of ACPA. But I learned a lot, but it was interesting. So, but yeah, those are some of the things that I think of. And also, too, the what we found at ACPA is that our members really, really resonate to smaller professional development opportunities. So the institutes that we have every year, which typically has maybe 100 to 150, sometimes 75 people. Our members really, we see that folks don't always resonate to this huge convention that we have every year. And most of our members really do love the delivery of professional development leadership opportunities through our institutes that we have.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really awesome to hear. You know, something we haven't had the opportunity to talk about, but your comment made me think about it is, like you said, you felt a little overwhelmed in that conversation about ACPA and NASPA merging, because at the time it was two really powerful groups with very separate cultures thinking about how can we come together. Is there anything like that you took away from that experience that maybe helped you as a professional or something in that merger, in those conversations, that made you step back and kind of rethink your work in student affairs?
Well, I think that I've always been a member of both ACPA and NASPA since graduate school. So, and been involved in some leadership positions at NASPA too, because I see that they're both needed in the profession. In other words, we need each other. My perception, and I'm very happy to talk about my perspective on this. But my perspective is interesting because up until the time when we actually had the vote for consolidation, ACPA and NASPA were sort of moving toward looking pretty similar. There was this, they even looked alike when it came to conventions and conferences and structure and organization. It was sort of this thing where there were a good number of people who believed that it's gonna happen, so let's just sort of get ready for it to happen. Then I do believe that there are some people, specifically NASPA, long-term NASPA members who were entrenched in saying, we're not sure this is something we want to see happen. And then when the vote happened and the vote was to not consolidate, then both associations sort of decided, how can we be different so that people can, number one, have a choice. It's kind of like Pepsi and Coke, you know, it's like, and then, you know, how can we also to know that we need to be partners in this? I think we're definitely at a place now, a lot of folks who really entrenched, and I think there needed to be some healing after the vote didn't happen. You know, because there's some people that were, I believe there's a lot of hurt feelings. I know a lot of people that were disappointed. And I do believe that, you know, one of the things that folks who come to my presidential address will hear is I have this piece where it says, it's not ACPA or NAFTA, it's ACPA and NAFTA. And I've already had conversations with the NAFTA president and the chair of the board, who are both good friends of mine. And we're going to have a campaign that we're going to talk about that, because when it comes to policy, when it comes to representing higher education in public policy forums, we got to be together. And we can definitely balance each other out in terms of supporting each other. And most people believe that. And if you ask a graduate student, what's the difference between ACP and NAFTA? They have no idea. Or a new professional, they always ask the question. Every time I'm on a call with a group of graduate students in higher ed, the very first question I get as ACPA president is, why are there two associations? So I have to go through the history, which I happen to know. And so, you know, how it became, you know, NAFTA began with a group of deans of men who got together and built a professional association. ACPA started with a group of women, all women, who were not allowed to be in any other association because they were women. And so they started their own association as a part of ACA, and then we became what we are there. So because of our roots, you can understand how we're structured and how we are who we are. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you for sharing that. That's super insightful.
You know, I love that. And as you said, you know, it's ACPA and NASPA, you know, and so I think about some of the great, you know, professional development opportunities such as Leadership Educators Institute that, you know, the organizations come together to put on along with the National Clearinghouse for Leadership Programs. And so, you know, there's power in numbers and in partnerships. Can you, Vernon, share a little bit about your experience, you know, participating in and attending some of the annual or regional conferences for ACPA? You know, what is that experience like?
Sure. What I love about the institutes, many of them have sort of a cohort feel to them, like the Mid-Level Managers Institute that is named after Donna Barassa, who was one of the, was in the international office and was someone who began conversations around what does professional development and leadership look like in higher education? How can we develop curriculum to really and truly give people a base to continue to grow and learn? That's where the first conversations around the professional competencies in higher education came from, was Donna Barassa. And so the Mid-Level Management Institute, it definitely has a cohort feel where people leave feeling that, you know, this was our group, that we had some professional development. Also to, you know, the Leadership Educators Institute then is much more of a conference feel. So you've got keynote speakers and breakout sessions, so it's a little different. But that's what I love about both ACPA and NASPA, is that we get to offer opportunities for folks to gather to kind of deep dive into a specific topic so that folks can build. There's some great conversations that's going on right now in terms of certification in higher education. And NASPA, ACPA has been a part of that conversation for a long time. We've had several committees that have met to talk about it. Now, NASPA's joined us to say, okay, let's see where we can go with this. And so stay tuned. There's going to be some interesting conversations coming up that both of our, at the NASPA conference in Austin, Texas, and then at our convention in Nashville, we're going to be doing some pretty quick movement around what's going to be next in that and how can we continue to do that. So yeah, I do believe that the more we can do in terms of webinars, easy access to professional development, allows for ACPA to sort of be nimble, you know, because, you know, it's difficult to pull together a convention and know that higher education is so volatile right now that anything can happen. And so how can we be nimble and be able to respond when something happens that we need to provide support for people on college campuses? So sometimes it is through a webinar or through an easy access because we can't really adjust the convention program. We do, though, at every, people don't realize this, but at every convention, we always have one or two program slots that we kind of keep open just in case something flares up that we may need to sort of do some conversations around. And so I'm so glad that we started doing that a few years ago, actually, to kind of be a little bit more nimble. And I know NASPA does it too, in terms of, you know, because we never know what's going to happen from day to day as we continue to maneuver the higher education landscape. So, yeah.
It's so interesting that you have the foresight to say, let's keep those spots open just in case, because you know that the conversation is going to happen whether you lead it or not. And what an amazing opportunity to offer that space just in case it happens. It really, to me, feels like you care about the people that are there, you're planning for them, as well as just being mindful of what's happening in the world and how it can impact different people. You talked a little bit about professional development and easy access and webinars. What are some of the other resources that ACPA offers outside of the conferences, outside of the things like that? What are some of the other things people can get if they get involved?
What I love to talk about is just access to scholarly research around higher education and student affairs. I mean, our Journal of College Student Development continues to be the number one educational journal and resource for higher education professionals. About Campus, our little sort of magazine, I call it the Newsweek of ACPA. I really like it. Great articles. So folks who may not be ready to go through the very rigorous process of pulling together research for a JCSD article, they can be involved in just in terms of the About Campus magazine. Also, too, all the entities, whether it be entities that are connected to identity groups or entities that are connected to functional areas or what we call communities of practice, all of those continue to sort of pump out great research for folks. I've been noticing just some of the emails that have been coming out as we head up to convention that talk about, here are the programs that we're offering based on this entity group. You know, here are the meetings that we're having. Once again, opportunities for folks to engage in smaller settings. You know, the Residential Curriculum Institute is now the Institute for the Curricular Approach because it's broader than just living in our residence halls. It's about what is the experience that college students are having on campus and how can we increase their learning both inside of the classroom, outside of the classroom. So that's really cool to kind of see that continue to grow and build. So, yeah.
I love hearing about the residential life and leadership development overlap. So I'm fortunate to work at a university where they have an assistant director position for that. And it's more than just we're going to organize training for RAs, but it's we're really creating these programs. So yes, we can train our RAs, but we're training our staff. We're also offering opportunities to provide leadership development for students who live in that space. And then thinking about like every program that we offer and how it can contribute to making people better. I don't think that I would have noticed that just being on the leadership development side, if I hadn't been in student affairs and had a strong partnership with our Res Life team. But I think it's something that makes so much sense as you're thinking about like past programs that you would have done now kind of having that lens or like, what do we really want students to take away from this? Even though like pizza in the residence hall may seem like pizza in the residence hall, but if you're having this great discussion about, you know, issues on campus or opportunities for growth, it then becomes so much more that students will remember and hopefully learn something from that they can use moving forward.
Yeah, I had an interesting call in the fall. A lot of my initial, for 14 years, I worked in housing and residential life. And during that time, especially near the end, was working specifically around advising the Residence Hall Association. So working a lot with student leadership in our residence halls. And I remember there was an undergraduate student who was, you know, pretty shy and had run for treasurer because he was a business major at University of Georgia. And then it came around for there to be elections for president. And I just, you know, just mentioned it to him in passing. I'm like, have you thought about, you know, running for RHA president? And I think that you'd be a great addition to the team. You know, you've done a great job as treasurer. Would that be something you could do? And he did. He ran and he was a great president. But, you know, he's very different because he wasn't the most outgoing person, but definitely solid, really. And he called me. This is a true story. This past fall, I get a text from him. I mean, I get an email from him, and he goes, I'd love to talk to you sometime. And, you know, we've been on Facebook, you know, I've seen him and his family and stuff. And he just, you know, he has two kids that are now in college, and he is trying to think of how he can be supportive of them. And all he asked me was, he said, what did you see in me that made you think that I could be an RHA president and be involved in leadership? He said, I'm not a public speaker. And he went through all of these things. And I said, you, obviously, I made a good decision because you did very well. But he never saw himself as someone who was could be in a leadership role in that capacity. And, you know, you sometimes never realize, you know, the impact you have on undergraduate students when you just say, I think you can do this. And that's a true story, just happened. And it was so nice to have him, you know, just reach out and say, you know, what was it about me? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. You know, took a risk. Yeah, you did okay. So it was fun.
No, thank you for sharing that, Vernon. I think, you know, so much as leadership educators and as professional, you know, staff and faculty at universities, it's almost like our, you know, subliminal responsibility to just say, well, why not? You know, or have you seen this opportunity? Have you checked your email? Hey, I sent you this thing, you know, and just that tap on the shoulder. Not only have we heard that from some of the individuals that we spoke to about, you know, their own involvement, but certainly some of the things that they've shared that they have paid forward to other individuals of, you know, getting involved in various professional associations or getting into leadership roles, to be more specific, in some of these professional associations, with somebody just saying, you know, well, have you thought about running for fill in the blank, you know, and you kind of said that as well, you know, as getting involved into a higher level role into ACPA. Can you think of any fun or an impactful story from your involvement or participation in ACPA in particular at this point?
I think, what's something that's been fun? I do like, I think that one fun story that people don't realize is that people know that Jamie Washington, myself, Kathy Aubert, and Mara Collins started the Social Justice Training Institute in 1998, where we decided there was really no professional development opportunities for people doing this equity work and inclusion work. It was sort of this, people were sort of doing the work through their marginalized identities, like, you know, I'm passionate about it, so I think I can do this work. And this was before a lot of positions were developed around, you know, social justice and equity. And so we decided we need to develop something to get back to the profession where people can do professional development opportunities. You know, like, I'm going to grow and learn in this field that we're calling social justice and equity. And so it was, you know, it was interesting that people don't realize that the reason why we got together was Jamie and I were already doing programs, and we'd heard about other folks who were doing programs, and I guess Mara and Kathy had put together some programs, and I don't know what conference it was, but someone basically sent us an email and said, the four of you have developed a program that's similar, work together and do the pre-con. So we were like, we don't even know these people, but okay. So, you know, and I'll tell you that I'm usually the one that, I really don't like when conferences do that, when they say, hey, you have similar topics, you don't know each other, but get together and do a presentation. Now, that being said, if we had not sort of gotten together to do this pre-convention workshop, SJTI would have never happened. We would have never have developed the friendship that we have now. And so that's probably the thing that I remember most. It's like ACPA allowed for four people to get together who really, you know, Jamie and I knew each other because we were in graduate school together. But the fact that the power of pulling together four people to do a pre-convention workshop, and then the friendship that built from that led us to developing the Social Justice Training Institute. So that's probably the coolest story. So I always say ACPA had the last laugh, even though I fought so hard to not. I even sent an email and basically said, we can do two different pre-cons. It doesn't have to be one. And they're like, nope, we only want one. So I'll say that they were right as a result, even though in the moment I didn't see the long-term effect, of us being together and working together. So
don't worry, we won't tell anybody. Your secret is safe with us and our listeners. what an amazing, to me, that's such an amazing story, knowing how impactful SJTI is and how, I hate to say popular because I feel like that doesn't do it justice, but how needed it is and how we're consistently seeing that that conversation 20 years later is still happening and still necessary. And there's people that are still interested in it. So, you know, I'm glad you were wrong and ACPA was right, because the blessing of the SJTI as the baby of that that conversation, that pre-con is an amazing resource. So we've asked you a ton of questions. Is there anything else that you want to share that maybe we didn't ask that you feel is important in this conversation?
Well, I do like, I think Dan sort of alluded to this a little in terms of the mentorship that we get when we're in associations and we give. And I do know for me, if it wasn't for Nancy Evans saying, Vernon, I see there's a role that you can play here. Come join me. That was the beginning for me in terms of ACPA and my involvement. And we need to do the same for others. And I know that for me, I will take 30 minutes to talk to anyone who sends me an email that says, hey, I have a question. You know, lately I'm getting questions about being a full-time consultant, which I'm happy to tell people that it is not what you think it is. People think it's glamorous. It is totally not. So I love having conversations around what is it like to be sort of higher education adjacent. You know, I work, even though I'm not on a campus, I probably see more students now than I've ever seen in my entire life working on a campus, because I'm constantly on campuses doing things. And so I do feel current. I do feel that I know what's happening in the pulse, both with graduate students and undergraduate students. And so that's been kind of cool to kind of have that. But I'm very, very mindful when I'm at a convention now to know that people see me, especially now as I'm moving into the presidency. I mean, I've got to be that person, that Susan Komobus that says, you know, from the stage, that they'll remember me. The fact that I remember, I can visually see the huge ballroom in Houston and her on stage. I can see it. For that image to still be in my mind, you know, so many years later, says something about the power of being that visible leader. And so that's going to be how I'm going to enter the convention as we move to Nashville. Is I'm going to be in that space of, I want to be that person to hopefully that people see me on stage and go, I want to be that. And I want to be involved in ACPA in some sort of way. So that's what I want to try to do is know that I'm that person.
I think you already are. I remember the first time I saw you was Ohio State LEI in 2012. And I went to your session and I left with two thoughts, like, I'm not doing enough in social justice work. And I got to talk to Vernon or read whatever he's writing, because he's doing it and we need to do it. And it was funny because I felt confident in my abilities. And then I went to your session and I was like, wow, I got a lot of work to do. So I feel like you are low-key probably inspiring people. You might not hear about it until you retire at some point. So when your retirement ceremony happens, you'll hear it. But then I also think about this conversation. I want the Vernon Wall book, because you have all these great stories. You've shared like snippets with us, right, Dan? Like shared a couple of snippets. And now I'm like, there's more I want to hear about your life. So when you're ready for the memoir and the retirement ceremony, I think you'll get your affirmation then of all the hard work that you've done.
Yeah, look for it. That's next.
That'll be in a podcast interview to come. So, no, Vernon, thank you so much for spending time with us today, and you know, for taking that time out to share a little bit not only about yourself but about ACPA and everything that it has to offer for leadership educators in the field.
Cool. Well, our website is myacpa.org. So, you know, take a look. Love for folks to join us in Nashville, and totally want you to join us in Long Beach, because that's where we will wrap up my presidency. And we haven't been to the West Coast in a while. So and Long Beach is one of my favorite cities. So we'll be full circle back there in March of 2021.
And that wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening at home or walking your dog or engaging in another activity where you are practicing social distancing.
We are the gurus of social distance podcasting, as we are separated by 6 states, more than the CDC required 6 feet.
Well, that is what we do. So way to be a leader in that area. So jokes aside, thank you for joining us today. We invite you to follow us on Twitter. I am at @Dr_leadership and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laura JB. We want to encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they are released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that our guests shared. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available, and we also encourage you to rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We'd also like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in New Strategy and Management.
That's right. And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator. And he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. He's also a Guggenheim Fellow, some new news. You can check him out, yeah, at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thank you so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience. And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.com. And we hope you will listen to our next episode wherever you get your podcasts.